Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Happy anniversary! Happy Independence Day! Interdependence Day! Full moon. Who was watching with me last night? Wow. So this is my last anniversary session as abbot. It's a time of deep gratitude, remembrance, reflection. Gratitude to Edo Shimano Roshi and Soen Nakagawa Roshi for making this beautiful place possible. For their incandescent teaching. Which is still inspiring generations of students who never met them in person, but who feel what they have given. And for their bringing the practice of Rinzai Zen to America. Along with other Zen pioneers like Soen Shaku Roshi and his American disciple Ida Russell, Joshu Sasaki Roshi, Hakuun Yasutani Roshi, Dr. D.T. Suzuki, Nyogen Senzaki Sensei, Sokeyan Sasaki Roshi, and his disciple, Ruth Fuller Sasaki. And remembrance and thanks to all my Dharma sisters and brothers going back to the mid-60s and early 70s. People like Myo-on Maureen Friedgood, later Maureen Stewart, who became one of my teachers. Margot Wilkie, who became a disciple of Domo Geshe Rinpoche, just down the road from here. Wado Vicky Gurdy, Dogo Don Scanlon, Hoko, Deborah, and Muyo, Peter Matheson. John Dido Lurie. All have passed. And many others still with us, like Eshin Brenda Lukman, and Zenshin Richard Rudin. I was remembering my first sitting in this building. It was the summer of 1975. It was still under construction. After lunch on the fifth day of a seven-day session, which we were holding in Jerakuan, now the Beecher House, after lunch, we all went up here and cleaned thoroughly. There was a lot of dust from all the construction. And I wrote in Dharma Seasons, the newsletter at the time, quarterly. That evening, the first Zazen in the new Zendo began. Roshi said, "This floor has finally been laid. Now we must sit with all our might. We must be the nails and screws." On July 4th, 1975, he took the high seat for the first time in this new building and began, "At last, a baby is born." But he could not continue. Tears started. Soon, many around him were silently weeping. After several moments, he said, "I am going to ask my friend Suigon Eddie Daniels to play this teisho." He was a well-known jazz musician. Suigon went to the altar with his flute and played, "A Child is Born." And the following month, we had full session in this building. And Soen Roshi spoke of Edo Roshi's and the Sangha's great effort. There were 53 bodhisattvas coming together for this event, which, he said, spreads its spiritual waves more strongly than any radio or TV, penetrating throughout the universe. And I know we have felt that more recently, right? Called Zoom. How many are here? 43? 42? 42 bodhisattvas today. And I also wrote in that newsletter Eido Roshi told us that although both he and Soen Roshi have Rinzai Zen background, in this new Zendo, on this new continent, we will establish neither Rinzai nor Soto Zen, but Daibosatsu Zen. So fresh, creative, pioneering, courageous. This is what we are carrying on, all right? Not something stultified, establishment oriented, something alive. And his intention was to offer International Daibosatsu Zendo Kongoji as a gift to the United States of America on its 200th birthday. And on July 4th, 1976, Buddhist masters and practitioners from Japan, Korea, Tibet, China, Vietnam, Europe, and the Americas gathered for opening ceremonies here. Some of them you know very well. On DBZ's 10th anniversary, in the newsletter, Eido Roshi's wife, Aiho-san, was interviewed, and she spoke of what practice means. To cultivate virtue, to practice inconspicuous deeds, to do the work which others avoid, such as toilet cleaning, cleaning the kitchen, dishwashing, and many, many things which do not attract attention. Try to hide what you are doing. This is called intoku in Japanese. When we receive difficult things from the egos of other people, we try to accept and forgive instead of complaining or being angry with them. So we say, intoku. Whether people are looking or not, and with no calculation in mind, do intoku. If so, I think that American Zen will really become rooted. And she continued, Zazen practice is really daily life, 24 hours, not just an exercise to eliminate thought while sitting on a cushion. We offer ourselves to the Dharma. We are sitting on the cushion which was made by many, many pioneers' energy. Those who made this movement from east to west. Reflecting on those early years, and the struggles and difficulties that arose here. Tears come. I remember that energy, that innocence, and sheer enthusiasm. We had no idea what we were doing. It was so new and so incredible. So just what we needed. But also, I cannot forget the pain as we came to recognize that there were karmic patterns hidden beneath the brilliance of great insight. And of course, light and darkness intermingle. Eddie Daniels played, "A child is born. Those of us who have gone through labor and childbirth know that it's both agonizing and supremely joyful." And then what? Raising a child, going through the terrible twos, adolescence, adulthood, and for some, the worst agony of all, having a child fall ill. Having a child overcome by addiction. The loss of a child. So going through that time, despite people's best efforts, nothing can remain hidden. In those times, the prevailing view was kind of like the military's view of being gay.
Don't ask, don't tell.
But even so, The asking and telling grew more intense in direct proportion to the degree of secrecy. We may think we're undercover. Remember that old song, some of you may remember the chiffons back in 1966. No one knows what's going on in my mind but me. Really? You know what the Dhammapada says? You are what you think. From your thoughts comes speech. From your words come actions. And everyone is affected. How can it not be so? Soen Shaku Roshi said, your body is not your body. It is part of the whole body of all sentient beings. Your mind is not your mind. It is but a constituent of all mind. And, of course, we view every situation from our own perceptions, which, as Khimpu said yesterday, are rarely free of afflictive karma, old patterns, distortion. And with our habitual dualistic mindset, we judge and condemn, but rarely inquire into our own hearts. It's so easy to criticize others, but if we are to lead lives of intoku, we must be aware of our own lack of maturity, our own various weaknesses. Can we acknowledge honestly unskillful acts without blaming and castigating? What do you think?
Yes, but it's hard.
Very hard. Very hard. We tend to fall into that dualistic pattern of hiding it, right? Or pointing the finger. can we return? While acknowledging to the pure heart we have by nature. Can we see our karmic entanglements, our dissatisfaction and craving, as the goad, the push we need to say, enough? I'm fed up with this circling around again and again. I want to stop. Oh, what did the Buddha teach? The Four Noble Truths, right? Okay. Yeah. Dukkha. Yeah. I want more of this. I don't want any of that. I want to keep what I like. I don't want to let it go. And finally, what? Just sit down and shut up. Stop. And follow the great path that he outlined. Session is the time for facing what we need to see. Time for purification, atonement, forgiveness, and for really resolving to change what we know needs changing. That's what practice is. With this kind of firm resolve, we develop our early aspiration that led us to this practice. Our vow and our resolve to take this on again and again without shirking, without trying to find a way around it. For lifetimes, if necessary, to purify our karma. Then our response to what needs attention can come from that place of natural wisdom, natural compassion. And we can shine the light into all the darkest corners of our personal and collective karma. We can accept our mistakes, our failures, with faith and understanding. And arouse our determination to dig into this matter, to see with a discerning eye of true insight. And no matter what the circumstances, to march on bravely, as Soen Roshi always told us. Bravely march on from his own experience, his own suffering. What does this say?
How old are you?
Huh? What does it say? Is that a 3 or a 4? Huh?
327.
Thank you. I couldn't see which was which. Makes a big difference for Tenzo-san. So for all these 47 years, we've been repeatedly investigating case 2 of the gateless barrier, Momonkan, Yakujo and the fox. Is an enlightened person free from karma? If you are enlightened, maybe I'll put it a different way. When you are enlightened, can you do anything you want? Many years ago, I visited Dayen Benaj Roshi. She had just come back from Japan. She was living in a rural part of Pennsylvania. She had her zendo there. And she had been an admired ballet dancer. And she told me the story that when she was considering moving to Japan to do ballet there, she consulted with an elderly woman, neighbor. And this woman said to her, "You can do anything as long as you're willing to pay the price." Diane did go to Japan. Her ballet career disappeared. She ended up staying for 23 years, not as a dancer, but as a Zen nun at Aichi Senmon Nisodo in Nagoya under Shodo Aoyama Roshi. And she translated Aoyama Roshi's teachings in the book Zen Seeds, Reflections of a Female Priest, which came out in 1990. and which many of us have read many, many times. So, we can't know the price ahead of time. There used to be a TV show, I never saw it, but I knew the name of it. Maybe some of you have seen it, The Price is Right. Yes, you did? You saw it? In my younger days, I was very willful. Really, from early childhood on, maybe I still have a little bit of that. In fact, it can be helpful in many ways through long practice. It can be transformed on our better days into willingness rather than egocentric willfulness. But back then, I had a great avidity. Avidity, you know what this means? I want. Avidity. Wonderful word. Avidity to experience everything. Good, the bad, the ugly. Bring it on. And you know, back in the 60s, there was a lot, a lot available. Grace Jones had a great song about that. I'm doing it again. This wanting to experience everything I was a painter, but it was not just to create art that I wanted, but to live my life as art. Oscar Wildean, as that might be. And I made many headstrong decisions that didn't take others into account, or more often that ensnared others into my adventures. How many of you went through such things? So much fun, right? But, oh, I came to see the price was not right. It was really costly. And I remember singing Edith Piaf's Rien, je ne regrette rien. But I do sincerely have regrets. But the good news is they help me firm up my life's course. And soon I'll be 80. So it's a wonderful time to look back on all of this. Yesterday, in his very moving talk, Khimpu spoke of Zen sickness, going into emptiness and getting stuck there, preferring it to the down and dirty everyday engagement that is our responsibility. You know the feeling, I'm in Mushin. Someone else can take out the trash. Or taking the long view. Oh, in another kalpa, this won't count. Wonderful way of avoidance. Or what John Wellwood termed spiritual bypassing. You know, I got to get me some enlightenment so I don't have to deal with all these inconvenient truths in my life. Or misunderstanding Rinzai's Buji. Yes, there is nothing to do. Fundamentally, the mess is perfect as it is. But go clean the toilets. And what about all the people who have no home, camped out under the highways, the overpasses? More of them every day. What is our vow? We must take a step further at the top of the 100-foot pole. We must come forth and respond in the 10 directions to the circumstances we find ourselves in. Yes, getting back to Hyakujo and the fox. Not that we've gone anywhere. In ancient times, the head monk on the mountain where eventually Hyakujo had his monastery was asked this question. Does an enlightened person fall under the yoke of causation? Probably the head monk thought, well, isn't the very meaning of enlightenment freedom from that endless round? So he said, no, an enlightened person is not subject to cause and effect. He was immediately turned into a fox. 500 lifetimes later, effect after effect after effect, he was able to take the temporary form of an old man, and he stood at the back of Hyakujo's assembly listening to his talks. And finally he was able to ask from truly humble, truly not knowing mind, please tell me, does an enlightened person fall under the yoke of causation? What did Hyakujo say? Enlightened person does not ignore causation. Does not ignore. A lot has changed in the 47 years since the bicentennial. Things have been brought to light. Books have been published, giving an honest appraisal of American history, acknowledging the genocide of indigenous people, slavery, and continuing structural racism, the devastation of our home, Mother Earth. Homophobia, anti-Semitism, anti-Asian violence, and all manner of unjust policies. All of these came to light, especially during the pandemic and devastating incidents of police violence against Black and brown people. Of course, in today's political environment, those books are being banned and removed from schools and libraries on a daily basis. So around we go. Someone said, we used to come here to Dabusatsu to get away from all these things. Zen practice at DBZ was like an oasis of peace where we could go and sit and forget about what was going on out there. But out there is right here. And this is not a practice of shunning the world or taking time out from the difficulties of human existence. We have to acknowledge and be one with the dukkha within and around us. There's no scenic overpass. That's quite a key delusion that must be rooted out. We've had 3 years of a pandemic that continues to bring loss and heartache in all sorts of ways. Officials have tried to figure out the cause of the coronavirus. Was it animal to human transmission from the miserable wildlife caged in open food markets? Or was it a malicious or a careless lab leak? We don't have far to look. What is the cause? Ourselves when we're caught up in the three poisons, right? Greed, anger, and ignorance. The Lotus Sutra tells us, your house is on fire. The planet is on fire. Here, there, and everywhere, the truth of interconnectedness has been brought home. Just a little north of us, 12 million acres of wildfires continue to burn. Forty-seven years ago, we couldn't have imagined beginning a summer session with all the doors and windows shut tight. Wildfire smoke was something that happened out west or elsewhere, anyway. Nor could we have believed that we'd experience various stages of lockdowns due to a pandemic, that we'd have climate disaster refugees taking part in a closed COVID kese of indeterminate length. And reopening to in-person practice has not been easy. The senior students who are essential for the training of new kese participants are no longer in residence. People are trying to pick up the pieces of their lives, of course. We cannot ignore the effects of causation. We certainly can't simply revert to how things were. The people who are attempting to do that are quite overwhelmed by aggravation and frustration, confrontation Misunderstanding? What do you mean those supplies aren't available? What do you mean you don't have any workers ready to come and fix what we need fixed? Nope. When nothing works, when there's nothing left, we can really experience what Zen practice is. We delve right into that nothing. Seeing through our illusions and vague hopes and all the appearances that we've taken for reality. We can't ignore causation. We have to do our best to respond to the call. And the calls are many. The calls are here. So, sitting deeply, cultivating samadhi, and the discernment to know what to do, how and when to do it, whether to do it. And even when we don't know what to do, trusting in our original nature and rededicating ourselves to the four great vows. Nyogen Senzaki said, when Buddha Shakyamuni attained his realization, he saw all sentient beings with deep compassion. He sought their welfare and deliverance. Buddha exemplified the true nature of supreme enlightenment. The fourfold vow is what arouses the yearning for supreme enlightenment and is what verifies it. The late poet Mary Oliver wrote, in Blackwater Woods, and put it this way, to live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go.
This has been a Zen Study Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.